Shager, how you doing?
Good, buddy. Sorry about that. I was in a dead zone with the cell phone, heading out to an acreage.
Oh, hey, whatever lame excuse you can come up with every time, that's fine. Okay.
You go ahead and find me 2 minutes. I don't know what I'll do without that 45 cents.
Oh, no. Every fine is never monetary, because a guy who makes as much money as you, like that, it's like fining the NHL guys. It doesn't matter to them, right? Fining you money won't matter. So the fines will be more, and I'm leaving it up to the listeners, and there's different fines for different time, you know, within reason, of course, you know.
Yeah, like push-ups or something? What are we talking about?
Hey, you know, push-ups that we put on video, sure, yeah, you know, different things like that. Maybe you'll have to shout out some of our listeners on Twitter on what great people they are, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Things that you'll really like.
You could just keep me for 2 minutes longer if you want. I mean, that's fine, too.
Oh, no, trust me. We have nothing else to say. Are you kidding me? I'm trying to stretch this out as it is. Darnell Nurse, we talked about McDavid yesterday. You brought up an interesting point as far as what they would do for games, in the rookie games. I got four of them. Darnell Nurse, I was intrigued by something. I was listening to an interview talking about coaches and young players, and how, you know, they always say, you know what, you don't want to worry about age, experience, and contracts and all that stuff. So I was like, you know, I was intrigued. So I was trying to find accurate comparables to Nurse, guys who had been drafted in the top 15, played two more years of junior or college, then debuted in the NHL as a 20-year-old. And, you know, in the last 15 years, Dion Phaneuf, Seabrook, Jack Johnson, Mark Stahl, Petrangelo, and Cowan were the guys who fit into that. Now, there's a lot of guys who played in the NHL prior to being 20, right? And so, you know, they're kind of in a different category. And I was surprised by how many minutes they played. And, you know, three of those guys were on playoff teams, two were on brutal teams, and one was on a just missing the playoff team in Petrangelo. And they were with defense corps, Ryan, the top to bottom, had arguably better, in most cases, excluding Seabrook, because Chicago's blue line was terrible. You know, better players overall than Edmonton. And I'm not saying Nurse is as good as those guys, but I'm not saying he's any worse than any of them. To me, you know, when I watch Nurse and you see him play, he might be the best skater on the blue line. Let's start there.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I read your article. I thought it was a really good article. You fleshed it out nicely. But I think what it – people want there to be some sort of rule of thumb. Right, people are wanting that. So what's the rule of thumb when you have a first round or a first overall pick or a, you know, top 10 pick and blah, 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 blah. What's the general rule of thumb? The problem is that each player is different. Each organization is different. Each coaching philosophy on how to use young players is somewhat different. There are so many different variables that what worked for Brent Seabrook might not work for Darnell Nurse, or it very well could work for Darnell Nurse. So there isn't really a rule of thumb that can be established, and I think that probably makes your point, which is anybody suggesting he has to go back or it's bad for his development, you don't think that that's accurate. And I would agree with you. I don't think you can have a rule of thumb where you go blanket rule like, Ala Detroit, say, where players have to put their time in the minors. I would agree with your assertion, if that's what it is, that you can't make this standard across-the-board rule that applies to developing players. So I'm with you on that. I think it depends player to player. It depends where the deficiencies are in the game. It depends on the coach and what kind of tolerance level the coach is going to have, and can a player develop, marinate properly in that environment. There's so many different variables for every player in each situation that really you got to take them all on the surface. And Leon Draisaitl last year was a perfect example of that, right? Other players who have been drafted lower than Draisaitl right out of the draft have had successful debut seasons as an 18 or 19-year-old in the NHL. For each player, it's different. And for Darnell last year, or for Leon last year, it didn't quite work out, and the formula wasn't quite right. He needed to go back, and he did. And it'll be the same for Darnell this year. What are the deficiencies? Can those be better remedied in the American League or the NHL? Where's the coach's philosophy on letting him ride through those waves at the NHL level?
It's a well-stated point. And when I look at the Oilers defenseman, and I think that to me is the other one where, you know, if Darnell Nurse can't make this team right now, I think it's a bigger concern. Like, I just don't see a high level of competition. That's not a knock on him, but that's why I think Darnell Nurse arguably is in a better position than some of those other guys, because the Oilers' blue line just is not that good.
Okay, but let's talk about what could keep Darnell Nurse off this team. So let's talk about some of the things that a 20-year-old defenseman might have, areas he might be deficient in his game, and then whether or not those things can be fixed at the NHL level or they're better being fixed at the American League level. So the physicality, we don't expect that to be a problem with Darnell Nurse. 218 pounds, like you said, mean streak, big, physically confident. We don't think that's going to be an issue. I believe the biggest issue Darnell Nurse is going to have is going to be in his decision-making on when to take chances and when to just stay home and play simple defense. I think that those split-second decisions where you're in an NHL game, things happen way faster than any league he's ever played in. What kind of decisions is he going to make? I think that's going to be the single biggest thing that we talk about. So where is that better remedied if that is an issue? If he's making bad decisions, bad reads, jumping in when he shouldn't, getting caught, taking too many chances, where do you remedy that? Do you remedy that in the NHL with Todd McClellan, a coach that has experience with young guys? But is that the kind of thing where you can't necessarily just keep rolling a guy out there who has a tendency to do those things? So now are you sitting him? Are you disciplining him? How are you handling it? Or are you better off having him be one of your top two defensemen in the minors and try and rein him in there, you know, with the coaching staff and the development program? It just comes down to what's the issue and where does it best get fixed. Leon Draisaitl is a great example. Foot speed. From the word go to top speed is not fast enough. Where's the best place to fix that? Well, they found out last year it's not in the NHL. They thought it was going to be in the NHL, that he would get up to speed if the game around him was faster. Turned out that wasn't the case. That was not the place for him to be working on that. So every case is different.
Yeah, a very, very different thing to work on, right? As far because speed is something that's really hard to keep up and improve during the year. I just, to me, over the last 12 drafts, defensemen, and there's already 24 of them that kind of played in the situation similar to Darnell Nurse and various teams and various size and different guys. And are they going to make some mistakes? Sure, but To me, the raw athleticism, I had one of the order players tell me they think Darnell Nurse right now today might be top three athletes on their team, right? From one of the other players. Yeah. So if you're that good athletically, and you know what? Yeah, he's a thoroughbred. And I know Peter Chiarelli talked about maybe they got to rein him in somewhat. And that's where coaching will do it. And also, you know, you're going to pair him up with a veteran guy, I would think that would help. Right. Like I was looking at, you know, who those guys played with. And most of them, you know, were playing like Jared Cowan played most of his minutes with Sergei Gonchar, who's not considered a great defensive defenseman by any stretch of the time when he was in Ottawa. But he was a veteran who knew how to move the puck to get it out of harm's way a lot quicker. Yeah. So Cowan necessarily didn't have to defend for long stretches.
Well, and it comes down. I mean, really, Todd McClellan and Peter Chiarelli and the coaching staff sitting in a room going, OK, can we work with this here? I mean, he gives us, if he plays 16 minutes and he gives us 13 really good minutes and he's prone to two or three bad reads or tough mistakes per game, are we willing to live with those and continue giving him his 16 minutes? Or if the Oilers win 60% of their first 25 games and are in the hunt, are they all of a sudden in a position where they can't continue to roll out a defenseman who's shown he can make some tough plays at bad times? Is Todd McClellan going to be going, I can't develop this player and keep us in the playoff properly and keep us in the playoff hunt at the same time? It's all a system of checks and balances where they go, you know what? Get him in the minors. Get him in a spot where he's playing 22, 23 minutes a night because that's what we want him playing here when he gets here to stay. He can work his way through those mistakes there and not on the big stage. And then the Oilers have a more veteran player who maybe is a little bit more reliable. I'm not saying that's what I would do. I'm saying those are the decisions they're going to be faced with.
Ryan Schock from TSN joins us. Schock, what is your expectations of Justin Schultz this season?
Yeah, that is as good a question as there is coming into this training camp for the Oilers. What a critical year for this important player in the organization. And man, this is an important player for this organization as much as it's been a tough go for the last two seasons. The simple fact is, I think we all know the potential Justin Schultz has, and I don't view him as a Carlson type, you know, 60-point defenseman. I've never thought of Justin Schultz like that. But Justin Schultz has the skill and the ability to be a top-pairing defenseman. It's just and to be a power play defenseman, a top power play defenseman is what I meant to say. But he hasn't realized that yet. He hasn't come around yet. The offensive confidence hasn't come around. And his confidence kind of went up and then has dipped down, and he hasn't pulled it out of that nosedive. Todd McClellan will be the answer to this if there is an answer as an Oiler. So I expect Justin Schultz to have a big-time bounce-back performance under Todd McClellan. I think that McClellan's a veteran coach. He's dealt with players like this before. I think he's going to get as much out of Justin Schultz as we've seen. And I think this is an important player for the Oilers. I don't think they can just move on from this guy. They don't have a boatload of guys that have that ability and that skill set ready to step right in. I mean, Jordan Osterley's good, but is he a regular NHL defenseman? Not yet.
No.
And he might be a little ways away from being that. Same thing with Lalagia. Same, the guys that are of this similar pedigree, they don't have guys that are ready to just do that.
No, not at all. Injuries aside, let's say all things are good and you don't have guys with extended injuries this year. Okay. Who do you see Schultz playing the most with 5-on-5?
Oh, man, that's a really good question. Okay, so if I work off my assumption that Schultz is going to have a bounce-back year under Todd McClellan, I could see him playing a lot with Oscar Klefbom. Because if Justin Schultz is playing well and showing a certain amount of reliability and can get his minutes back up into that top four range, I think it's just such a natural fit with Sequeira and Fane. And then you go with Klefbom and Schultz, and then you can go with whatever pairing you want in your third pairing. I think it's just a natural, perfect left-right scenario. So I'm going to assume he's going to play better, and I'm going to assume that that'll land him on a pairing with Oscar Klefbom.
Oscar Klefbom. So then do you have Sequeira and Fane playing together?
Yeah. Yeah, I have Sequeira and Fane, Klefbom and Schultz. If, like I said, if Schultz is having a bounce-back year, I think that's a spot that makes sense for him. And I know some feel that maybe they'd be better to insulate Klefbom with a defensive guy, a more veteran guy, and maybe allow Oscar to explore some offense in his game instead of always having to back up Justin like he has to when he plays with him. But I have a feeling that if Schultz does bounce back, they're going to want him out there a lot, and the natural fit's going to be with Klefbom. How about you?
Well, I don't necessarily want him out a lot 5-on-5. I've never seen anything from Schultz. When I talk a bounce back year for him, he's a guy to me who's more of a 19-minute a night player rather than a 23, excluding the nights when they get a lot of power play. He's definitely not one of my top four penalty killers, no chance.
But your second pairing can play 19 minutes. I mean, your top pairing can be in that 22-23 range, but your second pairing can be 19 minutes, can't they?
Well, usually most teams, I was going around the league looking at it, like usually you got four guys close to 20 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And so if your first is 23 and your second is 19, then that means your third pair is playing close to 19 as well. Right?
Yeah, well, give then you've got special teams time in there, too, right? So you've got...
Oh, you're talking just... No, I was talking 19 minutes total, not 19 even strength. No chance. He probably plays...
No, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. No, I think...
I think that Schultz will be able to... I'm being optimistic about the extent to which he'll bounce back. I think we'll be talking about Justin Schultz similar to the way we were before, which is a guy who is pushing the envelope to be on that top unit power play. I think he's going to have all kinds of weapons all around him on that power play. He's got a unique skill set. There's nobody else that's pushing for that time. If he looks like he can handle it, it's his. Like, it's his. Him and Sequeira, like, it's theirs, that power play. So I think that you're going to see better point production and I think better overall play out of Schultz. And that'll land him in the top four because they just don't have the strength on that right side.
Yeah, there's definitely some validity in that. Unless they slide Sequeira over to the right side, right? You put Schultz in your third pairing because you feel that Nurse is a guy who's ready to play more minutes, right? So there's
and that's the other question for. Sorry to interrupt you, but that's the other question for Todd McClellan. What do you do? Do you give these guys a total clean slate and say to Justin Schultz, "Look, man, I got you in my top four until you prove otherwise." So I'm not going to feel like I need to move guys to the right side. I got you there.
Yeah.
So, no, I don't feel the need to have Reinhardt move over or to have Sequeira move over or to have Oscar move over. I got Mark Fain and I got you, and I believe in you on the right side, and you're going to be in our second pairing, and go out there and show me why it makes sense. Or do you start moving guys around so you can hold Schultz down in the lineup? I could see McClellan giving him the benefit of the doubt and say, no, start everybody in their natural positions. There's nice synergy there. Sequeira, Payne, Klefbom, Schultz, you show me why you belong there. Like, it's kind of a new coach deal where you kind of let guys start with a clean slate. I don't care what happened up to this point.
No, that's true.
You feel like you let other coaches down, whatever, it didn't go well, doesn't matter. I know what you're capable of. Here you go. And then if 20 games into the season, it's like, yeah, it's not working. Well, all you did was give your player the benefit of the doubt and not kick his feet out from underneath them from game one.
Yeah, it's very true. I think there are lots of guys who should come in hungry to want to impress their new coach as well, you would hope.
Oh, man. And guys will be given lots of opportunity to do that. Nail Yakupov, same thing. You know, another head coach for Nail to try and find a way to work with. But same thing. I mean, you know, and that's why the whole philosophy on Purcell or Yakupov in the top six of forwards, I mean, that's more what Nail Yakupov's supposed to do. So if you're Todd McClellan, do you not go to Nail a first overall pick and go, yeah, Nail, of course, you're a top six forward in my eyes. I don't care what's happened in the past. You're an offensive. This is what I need from you defensively, but you are here to produce points as well, and here's some unbelievable line mates. Go do it. And then if he struggles, then you pull back the reins and make the changes you have to. Because you're not going to disappoint Teddy Purcell by starting him on a third line. That's where Teddy's lot in life is now, and he should know it. But do you get on the wrong side with Nail Yakupov from the get-go by throwing him out there with, you know, whoever? Lander and Letestu, or Lander and whoever.
I think if you're on the wrong side of Yakupov because he feels he deserves somewhere in the top six, then to me the wrong side is Yakupov, not the coach.
But don't you know what you understand what I mean, though, right? Like, the coach has a fresh relationship with every one of these players. And as a new coach, you go in there and you say, I don't care what's happened up to this point. You can write your own story with me. What are you? Nail Yakupov's not a top nine forward. He's supposed to be a top six offensive producing first overall forward. So if you're Todd McClellan, is it not in your best interest to give him a chance to show you that's exactly what he can be before you start him somewhere else? When you've got, I mean, man, the difference of forwards you're looking at on the third line versus the first two, there's a big drop off there in terms of offensive production. So why not hand a guy the opportunity and say, hey, this is what you're supposed to be. I believe in you, much like with Justin Schultz. And then if it's not working out, then you flip it. And then he's got nowhere to look but the mirror, right? So it's not about being afraid to piss guys off. It's about giving guys the belief that you believe in them and giving them a true clean slate with you to be what they are, what they want to be.
Shocker, it should be very interesting to see how camp unfolds on the blue line. We got a lot of people want karaoke from Rashog for a fine, so we'll see about that for tomorrow.
I'm gonna have to miss an entire hit.
What is your
2 minutes late?
What's your favorite show? Your favorite song right now on radio?
Oh, I don't know, man. I'm listening to sports talk radio all the time. I
come on, buddy. You're all into The Weeknd right now, maybe?
I don't know. There's some catchy Taylor Swift song, I'm sure. Oh, that I could probably
buddy, I'm sure. I'm sure you probably could. Nice. We might come up with that for Pause of Friday tomorrow. So you have a good one, and we will chat then.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
Ryan Rashog from TSN.